Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you are searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. We all have the SeatGeek app on our phones, and it's by far the easiest way we have found to shop for tickets. We can be anywhere in just a few taps, instantly find seats. Tristan and I actually just used SeatGeek recently to buy tickets to a minor league baseball game, and a good time was had. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever, saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, listeners to the Fantasy Focus Baseball get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So, just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
All streaming.
I don't know. This has been Giants Fantasy Focus. If you had asked me, like, before the show, name the top five Giants pitchers, I couldn't have done it. Reyes Morant is on there?
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, June 21st, 2018. I am Eric, he is Tristan, and we have Research Associate Kyle Soppy with us and producer Anthony Collada. You know, editorial watchdog today, so watch today be the day I say something wrong and get suspended for a week or something like that. We have lots to discuss today, and a lot of it has to do with relief pitching. Some crazy things are going on there. We will also preview the long weekends, a long weekend for this show, because we don't return until Monday. And, of course, the hash browns that Kyle reads so eloquently a little bit later on. And Tristan, who wins leagues, will try to answer those
sometimes questions.
Sometimes. I'm just here to direct traffic. Let's get going. Here's the buzz. Really, since the buzz is all about the relief pitchers,
yeah.
Let's just go right to the closer
carousel. I know where we're going. We're taking our time on a ride.
Wow.
That's new stuff, or relatively new.
All right, so let's listen to the closer carousel. Let's get that going.
The closer carousel.
I'm not sure what the biggest news among the relief pitcher set is.
Yeah, I know.
We had a significant trade, the second one from an AL team. A closer going to a place where he's going to be a setup man. We had a relief pitcher who doesn't, well, I'm not going to call him names, but this was not smart, who fought
not
the Marlins.
The first time.
Not the first time. Not fought the Marlins time. And fought a door or a wall. He's out for a while. And we had, Tristan, I think you've told me something like this before. Now, you once were hurt while trying to put on your pants, right? That happened once?
I'm trying to remember. Did that happen once?
I thought you remember you telling me a story about this.
I've fallen down, I think, putting my pants on. You get caught in, like, the other leg of the pants
and
everything.
There's a long history of pitchers getting hurt taking off their pants, and I was wondering if you had a database there among all the things you've got of how long it takes to recover from a pitcher getting hurt trying to take off his pants. Look, we jest.
It's clearly 8.37 days, so, you know, it's all good with the 10-day DL.
Look, I didn't think Brandon Morrow, the Cubs, was making it through 6 months without a DL stint, but I didn't think it was going to be back spasms because he was hurt taking off his pants. It's probably no laughing matter to him. He didn't seem too jovial with the reporters. But he's not going to be around for another week. So the Cubs closer now is?
Committee.
But I love hearing that.
Right. Well, that's what it is. It's Joe Maddon. I mean, we know him from his greatest days, the strategy. Pedro Strop is the guy I want.
Yeah, I think he's next, although it seems like Steve Cishek could go from, like,
absolutely
a sixth-inning role to the ninth.
It's 1-1-A for me. And not only that, I mean, if it is a 10-day absence, then I don't know that whoever stands in is going to be relevant. We're looking at the NL-only leagues, and it's more the strength of the overall five categories for those guys.
If Carl Edwards Jr. was just healthy, this wouldn't even be, more than a 5-second.
Oh, I know. Such poor timing with that. He's nearing a rehab stint, though.
All right. So I would guess Morrow comes back before him. So Morrow had pitched like once in 10 days, and, you know, who knows when he actually got hurt. But the point is he's not pitching this
weekend.
But it
was Sunday.
Well, he hadn't pitched for like a week before that. So, something was up. Anyway, he hasn't pitched 50 innings in a long time in a season, and I don't think he's doing it again this year. He's being handled very carefully by the Cubs. So, you know, you can make a case he's not a top 10 closer because of volume.
Yeah, and I mean, I think his top 10 case is made more on the weakness of the position itself than it is his own strengths here, because when he does pitch, what he gives you is so outstanding on a night-by-night basis. But you're right, the volume is considerably less than it is for other pitchers. I think that this DL stint actually works nicely in conjunction with trying to keep his workload in check. So, I hate to say an injury is a win-win, but isn't it kind of?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. What about the San Francisco Giants? Their closer lost the fight with a door, fractured hand, 6 to 8 weeks. And Sam Dyson got the save on Tuesday, but he sure didn't on Wednesday. So you tell me what direction this is going, because they have a good amount of experienced closers there. I mean, Mark Melancon, who I don't think is in the mix right now because he can't pitch on consecutive days, but he has extensive experience. Obviously, Sam Dyson, the lefty Tony Watson, has experience. What do you think Bruce Bochy does?
I think that Dyson's probably going to get the next save chance unless it happens to be a heavy lefty part of the lineup coming up in the ninth inning, in which case Watson will probably get some sort of situational save there. I think this is going to be very much up for grabs over the next several weeks. If I had to place an investment in one guy, since it's 6 to 8 weeks, I put it in Melancon. I do think that Bochy's going to go with the guy who has the greater experience, but I'm not excited about any of the three. I just don't think Dyson's that good a pitcher.
He's having a good year. He didn't even mention Melancon, like, when he was talking about who was going to get the immediate saves, though, which concerns me a bit. Dyson is on the ESPN most added list. Looks like the most added reliever right now is Kyle Bearclaw of Miami, which makes sense. He's up to 37% rostered. Dyson is at 16%. Joaquin Soria is at 39%, and there's nothing wrong with him unless he's the next AL closer to get traded. And we talk about Kelvin Herrera now, who was a Royal, now he's a National. And there's no doubt to me that Sean Doolittle will remain the closer. Got saves on Monday and Tuesday. He's having a terrific year. That walk-to-strikeout ratio is unbelievable. It's like Eckersley from the Cy Young year. So Kelvin Herrera is clearly not getting saves in Washington, although I do think he's next in line. And Doolittle has a little bit of a history like Morrow of just not being durable. So, but I mean, the way we've seen the Washington set up many of their pitch or go in the DL, Ryan Madsen and Kinsler, I think Herrera's next in line. That's a team that should win 95 games. They should get going eventually if Harper ever hits. Kansas City's closer. It does matter. I mean, Herrera had, what, like 14 saves? So they were getting save chances. Who do you think? I mean, I only found two guys that could even be in the mix. One has a K rate of like 5.5, Kevin McCarthy, and Brandon Maurer, who wasn't all that good when he was a closer for the Padres, is having an awful year. Who do you think gets the first save chance?
I think it's going to be McCarthy. Now, in our game, I don't think this is going to matter at all, and I don't think it's going to matter at all year. I just don't see anybody there who has special enough stuff to be able to hold this job consistently and put up the volume of saves. But I think McCarthy gets the next save. So, yes, in the deeper leagues, the deep mix, the AL onlys, McCarthy's the first pitcher to whom I'd go. Maurer, I agree, Eric. I mean, he's not looked good this year. The control has been a major problem for him for a good amount of time, especially this season. It's been awful. The one who I would have liked to have seen get the closer job moved into the rotation a couple of weeks ago. Brad Keller is the most interesting arm. So in the event that the Royals do bounce him back to the bullpen, it looks like they skipped him this week in the rotation. If they throw him into the bullpen a little bit and experiment there, maybe that becomes an interesting ad.
All right, brief answers now. Next closer to get traded to be a setup man?
Britton. Zach Britton.
I think Brad Hand is in Boston soon.
Before Britton, huh? I think the Orioles need to trade him. I could go either direction with those two.
Britton
I think
set up yesterday. He wasn't even the closer yesterday, which is kind of weird. You know,
yeah.
I thought they were going to go right to him. Next, most saves rest of the season, Angels.
Blake Parker.
Yeah, I kind of.
But I'm a believer there.
All right. Shane Green, more than 35 saves.
No, that's another guy I worry. I think it's.
They all
actually,
can't.
You know, that might be the first guy
traded.
To get traded.
So, I mean, there's not enough places for all of them to go. You can name like eight AL teams that their closers aren't great and they could be traded somewhere. They can't all end up on the Dodgers. You know what I mean? Like, there's just not enough room for all these guys to get dealt, which is what I wrote about the other day. You know, the Phillies probably need a reliever at some point. I don't know who's going to get their saves. I still don't think Sir Anthony Dominguez will be used as like a normal ninth inning guy. Toronto, Ryan Tepera is clearly sticking around as their closer. Tampa Bay, clearly Sergio Romo is sticking around as theirs.
Actually, Tepera might be another guy who gets traded. There's some talk that he'll be on the block.
He should. Right? Yeah. You know, you're not making the playoffs. You might as well trade the guy away.
In Green's case, the reason why I say no on that and think he's going to get traded is that Joe Jimenez behind him has pitched well enough that he deserves a look. At some point down the road here, obviously.
Let's talk about some starting pitchers who did some stuff since our last show. Blake Snell. That's an odd line. Seven walks against the Astros, and he won the game.
Yeah.
So Kyle on the note writes, is Snell basically Trevor Bauer, but with a little less control? A lot of strikeouts for both these guys. They could both end up top 10 strikeout guys.
It's an interesting comp, especially if you consider that Bauer did have similar issues with control early in his career. And I remember the, Eric, you probably remember this too, the Bauer game against the Astros where he was throwing a no-hitter through, I think it was six innings. Might have been it couldn't have been a perfect game. It was full of walks. It was a ton of walks and a ton of Ks and no hits through six innings. That does look somewhat similar. Is he a left-handed version of that? Maybe. I actually do think Snell this year has shown some improvement to me in terms of the control. It's far from elite, but you got to believe at this point. I mean, I think you put him in your top 20 starters recently, right?
Yeah, and I think he deserves it. He's the number 8 starting pitcher for the season on the player rater. Number 8 ahead of Aaron Nola. Trevor Bauer's number 10. I've got him in my top 20 as well.
He should be in the top 15, I think, without a doubt.
I think I have Bauer close to my top 10. Ross Stripling, number 16. He pitched.
Where do you have him?
Well,
he's a tough read.
He is. You know, that outing last night against the Cubs was fine. Seven strikeouts, no walks, three runs over six innings.
There's a perception with Stripling that he's still the swingman type. I think that's why people hesitate to rank him so generously. But to me, he's pitching like a guy who deserves top 30 fantasy starter status.
I mean, this is
too aggressive.
This is 8 consecutive outings. Basically, all his starts where it's at least 6 strikeouts. I mean, if I told you a normal pitcher, you know, who came up and was a starting pitcher all season long was doing that, you'd be like, wow, this is awesome. This is almost like Charlie Morton. Ross Stripling is doing what Charlie Morton's doing, but he's not being treated that way. Now he's up to 89% rostered in ESPN leagues, but still, it's kind of amazing what he's doing.
Remarkably, his control is so much better. That's been the big jump for Stripling this season, as that has been a huge improvement for him.
Any interest in Trevor Williams of Pittsburgh? One hit over 7 shutout innings on Monday. We'll probably get his next outing is coming up, so we'll probably get to that in the preview.
Yeah, the Pirates ended up pushing back their whole rotation by a day due to the rainout yesterday, so he's going to stay in turn. You and I had some discussions about Williams in the preseason. I remember with Labor and NL whether there was any interest there. I felt like he was worth throwing a couple bucks at. I still feel like if you were drafting fresh today that I'd take that approach with him. I just don't think he's got that special kind of talent that you keep in for each and every outing. I think that you're going to have to pick and choose sometimes, but I'd say that's top 80, top 90 starter, kind of on the fringe of mixed league relevance.
The top 5 starting pitchers over the past 30 days. Ross Stripling is number 1, edging out Corey Kluber, who's amazing, had one bad outing. Verlander, John Lester, who's great. And I remember we talked about him in April. I don't think he wanted any part of John Lester. I'm glad I've got him on a team or two. And Trevor Bauer, number 5, then Severino. So it's basically all the names you know, except Stripling's in there. It's pretty cool. Let me ask you about a guy who's still available in a lot of leagues. Frankie Montas, 4 quality starts and his 5 starts this season. Strikeouts a little bit spotty, but it's a good arm. It's a guy we've known about for a little while. Is that a pickup?
I think so. I do believe the next outing he's going to get is, isn't it another favorable one? It might be the San Diego one or, hold on, let me see exactly where he pitches. I do think in his case, you're going to have to do a little bit of matchups homework. We saw this when he played Houston. He just did not miss enough bats to be able to be worth your while, and that's going to be a problem against the more loaded offenses. Doesn't have an elite ground ball rate, not an elite K rate. Pretty good in terms of control. That's his big gain this season. But the FIP numbers say he's kind of like Williams, kind of like the American League's version of Williams. He's teetering on the brink of mixed league relevance.
2 Yankees are among the top 5 pitchers added in ESPN leagues. Jonathan Loaisiga. I don't know if I said it right.
Loaisiga.
Loaisiga, lasagna guy, and Domingo Herman. Who would you rather roster?
Domingo Herman.
Yeah, I think so, too. He's sticking around longer, right?
Because he was the 5 thrown in there after the Jordan Montgomery injury, and now he's pushed up to 4. So if they're going to bump a guy out in terms of a trade, it's going to be Loaisiga. The other two is that it's interesting that the Yankees and AAA have aligned Justin Sheffield's schedule with Loaisiga. That suggests to me that they already look at this as kind of a fluid situation at the 5th starter job. But Herman, they look at it as locked in. And his stuff has been very good. The command wavers from outing to outing when I watch him, but he's got a lot better stuff than I expected. I've been very impressed by what I've seen. You adding him? I know, it doesn't feel natural, but I think
right.
Stripling.
Yeah. I don't know if I can compare those two yet.
But people didn't believe in a guy who was looked at as a sixth starter swingman
That's
type,
fair.
So they're going to be behind the curve on picking up a guy like this.
Number one hitter by far over the past week is the amazing Brandon Nimmo, who's going to hit like 22 home runs, right? I mean, I don't see any end to this.
22 is not that generous.
Not at all. I mean, maybe he can't hit 30, can he? I mean,
What is he? Now, this is the thing.
He's got 12 home runs and 7 steals already, Tristan. This is like A.J. Pollock when he's healthy.
I don't think so. I don't think he's close to that class yet.
Yeah, but
do you?
He's doing this, and it. I don't know why I'm going to say it's not legitimate.
Well, what is legit? What do you expect from Nimmo going forward? I just had a
You're
debate with somebody on this
You're judging
him
based on his minor league numbers, and that's fair. But I've seen very little cause for minor league hitting numbers translating. Sometimes they do, and sometimes guys just hit for amazing power. I don't know why Nimmo's power has to just – I mean, it's absurd what he's doing. But he's not going to end up a top 20 outfielder. But if he continues on this pace, even if he just hits like 4 homers a month, Tristan, he's going to challenge, 30.
Mm,
25
if he hits 4 a month, he's going to fall a little bit short, but he'll get
close.
But
that's still unbelievable for him.
Do you think he more than doubles the homers and steals?
I think he should be more of a steals guy, but he's not even trying to do that. Now, he just had a series of Coors Field where things went really well. If he's available in your league, I don't know how you can't pick him up to see if it's real. Okay,
right. I think
it
he's
might
long
stop
gone.
Soon.
I think we're beyond
he's not.
That.
He's at 64% roster
right.
in ESPN leagues.
We're beyond that point. You had to get in on the bandwagon here, but to what extent do you stay on this bandwagon? This is going to become a very big debate point over the next month. And to me, I believe that he's legit. He's locked down a job, and there is absolutely mixed league value in him. But I do not think he belongs in the front of the rankings. I don't think he's a top 25 outfielder yet. I think he doubles these numbers at best, and the average comes down.
Yeah, I'd have a hard time ranking him as that.
Ballpark, where would you have him among outfielders?
I gotta compare him to others. I mean, he's going to be in my top 40. He has to be.
Okay.
And even that is saying a lot. Will he be in my top 30? Like, if you had to put him against Ryan Braun, I want to put him ahead of Braun.
Right, I do too, because there's more upside. That's the and we were very critical of Braun the other day.
And Braun is like borderline top 100 guy overall.
Like, the other thing too is Adam Jones, the guy who's been consistent for years. I mean, do you take him over a guy like that?
I'm ready to.
The boring versus the upside guy. Now, if you threw him against a player like Ender and Ciarte, are you going that far?
Stolen bases, although he stopped running. I don't know. I think I'm more in than you are on this because it seems like he's going to keep doing this.
Do you see a path to top 20 outfielder status the rest of the year?
Absolutely.
Do you think it's pretty likely? How strong do you feel about it?
I don't feel strongly. I feel like there's like a 2-for-30 coming up at some point.
Okay.
But the power speed element, the fact he leads off, he'll score runs. Even on that bad team, he scores runs. Yes, there's an absolute path to top 20 outfielder status.
Actually, here's a way of putting it. In terms of the breakthrough out of nowhere, is he more Justin Smoke's 2017 or is he more Yonder Alonso's 2017? Because remember how each of them, whether they kept it up, Smoke kept it up for a much greater part of the year. Alonso did cool.
Stopped in the second half.
Which
Probably
do you
Alonso.
Think he's more?
Probably Alonso.
Yeah, I agree.
You
with
agree
you.
With that?
Yeah.
Taking a look at the schedule here. ESPN Plus has a nice game on Thursday night. It's Carlos Martinez, the walking machine. He's not type Chatwood, but not there yet, against Brent Suter, who's kind of underrated. Doesn't go deep into games, but I don't see him leaving Milwaukee's rotation anytime soon. You heard an update on Jimmy Nelson? I haven't heard. I don't think it's before the All-Star break.
Yeah, I have not. He was supposed to be back around this time, and to be honest with you, I've not heard a definitive timetable for 2 to 3 weeks now. I'll see if I can dig up something, though.
And Carlos Martinez is concerning me because since he came off of the Sabre list stint, the velocity's way down and the walks are way up. Maybe it's just a command issue, but you can't walk 6, 7, and 5 over 3 outings totaling 12 2/3 innings and expect to be successful. It just doesn't work that way. 5 strikeouts in each game, but I'm not saying you drop him. But, I mean, do you even play Martinez today? Do you have to use him?
I don't think you have to. This is a real ballpark downgrade, and he's facing a lineup that can hit here. So with the velocity drop, that concerns me. If you got a starts cap, for example, I'd probably fade him. I ranked him generously this week still because I just believe in the guy's true talent, but you're right. I mean, you mentioned that there are some skills concerns in the short term. Definitely bears watching.
Friday's schedule on ESPN Plus, it's Patrick Corbin of Arizona, who had a great April and since then has been kind of average, against Ivan Nova of Pittsburgh. Corbin, you got to roster him because it's a lot of strikeouts, but the window to trade him, sell high as a top 20 starter, probably left.
Yeah. But I still think he's going to be a pretty relevant mixed league pitcher the rest of the way.
Sean Newcomb of the Braves, top 20 pitcher over the past 30 days. He's facing Baltimore. That's a really good matchup. Alex Cobb should be good for 5 or 6 runs in that one. we've talked Newcomb before. Junior Guerra's on the schedule to face St. Louis on Friday night against Jack Flaherty, who you and I both love. You know, Guerra's been kind of effective, and he's shut down St. Louis twice recently. ERA and FIP are in the 4 range, but that's got some value too. I mean, his ERA is a little, it's got to rise, one would think. Opponents batting just 159 against him with runners in scoring position. So he's doing a good job with runners on and strand rate, but again, like, the ERA just has to rise, but there's still some value. Cardinals bats, you know, Yadier Molina had a 2-homer game last night. We talked about Ozuna. I wrote about Matt Carpenter, who's batting over 300 for his past month. That's good offense, and it's going to get Paul DeJong back probably this month. Well, maybe not. It's only a week left of the month, but Paul DeJong, the shortstop, can hit. Yep. I mean, that's a good lineup when everybody's working together, you know?
Would you start Guerra? I'm intrigued by him.
I'd rather use Flaherty. I'd go Flaherty over Guerra, but the fact that we're even discussing Junior Guerra says something to me.
Right.
John Gray, John Snow at home against Miami.
They should align that with the Game of Thrones days. Have you seen that, where the Thrones traveling around all these stadiums?
I think I saw on Twitter, so it must be true. Somebody did something like that, like a montage of John. I don't know. but you can't use them. You can't use them anywhere, frankly. But look, the FIP versus the ERA and the strikeout rate tells you that this is a guy at some point is just going to emerge as a monster.
Is it? I mean,
that's what it tells me. That when you have those peripherals are legit. He just doesn't seem to get the outs, or it's always like a big inning or something. I don't know what it is with John Gray, but like, I'm not an idiot. I mean, there's something there. That strikeout rate, there's something there.
There is, but you know, Ricky Nolasco is another guy who had really good peripherals way back when. Did he ever really develop?
I don't think that's comp. The comp here is Trevor Bauer from last year and the year before.
Yeah, but Trevor Bauer also made a very distinct change last year. He was throwing different pitches, made a small adjustment to the way he used his pitches, and Gray has not really done that so far. So I think that's a pretty big hurdle to clear. I like this matchup because I like Miami as a matchup. I hate the fact that it's in Coors Field. But he has, in his career, he's had a better track record at Coors than he has on the road, so I don't know. He's maddening. He's probably the most frustrating pitcher out there right now.
And Jake Arrieta, that was a decent outing yesterday.
Yep.
That was fine. He gets away with stuff. But losing J.P. Crawford at DL does not help, because Crawford's a good defender at short or third, and Michael Franco at third is just not. Kingery's not at short. Saturday's ESPN Plus matchup is Oakland's Daniel Mignon with the mustache against Dylan Covey of the White Sox. Can't use either one of those, right?
Covey's actually pitched
kind
of decently. And, you know, he's done it against some tough offenses. He's had Boston and then 2 Cleveland games in the past 3 and has kind of held his own against them. The last outing wasn't so great in terms of control, though.
Miles Mikolas at Milwaukee, he did not look good against the Phillies. You know, there's an extreme range on his velocity of pitches, and even the fastball to some degree, which isn't that fast. But he didn't look good at all. There's a lot of base runners. He seems to me like a guy who should be giving up more hits than innings. He just doesn't walk anybody, but he scares me. That second half scares me a little bit as time goes on, I have to admit.
Yep, another guy who's very difficult to rank. I mean, you can make the case that he's top 25 because it's pretty thin at the position. I could also say he regresses to somewhere in the 50 to 60 range among starters.
Jake DeGrom going for another win at home against the Dodgers. Andrew Heaney, lefty for the Angels, hosting Toronto.
He's been pretty good this year. You know, I think Heaney and Tyler Skaggs have been a bit underrated for what they've done so far this year. There weren't many expectations on either pitcher.
Moving on to Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN. It's the Phillies and Nick Pivetta against the Nationals, and a pitcher to be named. Is that Fetty? Who is that? I don't know who's.
I believe that's the open one after Fetty. I think Fetty's
on Saturday.
Yes, Fetty is Saturday against Nola, so Sunday would be the spot that was used for Jeffrey Rodriguez, but he got sent down to the minors.
So that could be good news for the Phillies. Pivetta, are you trusting Pivetta? Because really great start to the season and then kind of inconsistent, well, bad since then. He's a strikeout guy. The way Washington's offense has hit, I don't remember the exact numbers here, maybe you can tell me, but like, they're being shut out like every other day. And Bryce Harper barely hitting 200, Daniel Murphy barely hitting 100. That's not going to continue for long. But do you start to use other pitchers here that you might not use against this offense because of the way, I mean, basically, how much do you trust the streak?
Well, I mean, considering the length at which it's extended so far with the Nationals, I believe it's a little bit more than a streak, and it is an actual matchup. Not as many Ks in the Nationals as I would expect. That's one thing that keeps me from going all in on Pivetta. I would lean towards starting him here, and for the most part, talented opponents I would use against them. Interesting in this matchup, though, Bryce Harper, who's been getting shifted a whole ton. Like, teams are doing this great against him, and that's causing a major issue with his batting average. The Phillies, who've had their struggles with the shift and performance on it.
Where are you ranking Harper at this point? Is he still... He can't be top 10. Is he top 20 still?
He's top 20 for me, but I've had my doubts even about that.
I mean, this has gone on for a while, this slump.
The thing with him is, if you look at the top 10 or so outfielders, once you get down to about the Eddie Rosario level, it's very difficult to say I'm going to push Harper, who's got all that natural talent behind him, and drop him down into the teens of that position. I can't make that case. Can you?
No, not yet.
But I think he's out of the top five of the position.
Today's Hash Browns are brought to you by Hims. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's really too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you have lost. Why do guys turn to weird solutions or just do nothing when they can turn to medicine and science? The solution, of course, is forhims.com. That's forhims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. And thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. They have well-known generic equivalents to name-brand subscriptions. Prescriptions to help you keep your hair, no snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements, prescription solutions backed by actual science, no waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to forhims.com. It's so easy. Answer a few questions, quick ones, and doctors will review and they can prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. So order now. Listeners to the Fantasy Focus Baseball get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. So just go to forhims.com/FFB. That's forhims.com/FFB for hims.com/FFB.
What's lots of fun is when you look at your ranks, you realize you had Harper exactly five among outfielders.
I think
I was very torn between the six and seven guys, Stanton and Charlie Blackmon, though.
Oh, I would have to move those guys ahead of him now. I think what's going to happen here is as soon as I drop Harper too far, he starts hitting again.
Yeah.
He's so talented. But at some point, I mean, we're in June. It's mid-June now. Late June.
Sure.
You've got to put up some numbers. He's not going to steal bases, I don't think. He must be hurt, right? I mean, like...
Yeah, if not for the injury history, I would give him full trust here and say that he still has that top 10 look. But the history says... His career's wavered back and forth in terms of the extremely positive fantasy
value. Only one great year out of, what, six? I keep telling people.
He's had two great years.
If we just look at a player who's had two great years out of six and we have him ranked in the top 10, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
Like, we wouldn't do this in another sport, Tristan. A football player would not get this kind of love. A pitcher wouldn't get this kind of love.
I don't know that I agree with you there. Adrian Peterson had a couple of ups and downs of injuries in his career.
He had an amazing career.
He did have an amazing career, but, I mean, he had one of those years that was like Harper's MVP season. Granted, Peterson had a lot more of them. I'm trying to think of another guy who might have fit that description. Le'Veon Bell missed time.
Matt Ryan's had one great year out of a decade.
Right, and we don't rank him.
We don't rank him
right,
that way.
Exactly.
I rank him like 20th or quarterback. I mean, Daniel Murphy almost concerns me less now than Harper, which I didn't expect to say, because with
actually,
Murphy, I kind
Andrew
of...
Andrew Luck.
Okay, maybe.
Is he the Andrew ranks. Luck of baseball?
Wow.
No, I mean, Andrew Luck has been an exceptional quarterback, and people have wanted to draft, I mean, not this or last year, have wanted to draft him either one, two, or three at the position.
Okay. Let's get to some questions here.
Sure. Ben wants to know if you can rank these three young guns in order of your favorite for the rest of the year and describe your confidence in each. We've got Acuna, Meadows, and Bowers.
Well, Meadows has stopped, predictably, right? Is he even playing? I never see him doing anything.
He had a decent game the other day, if I recall.
I mean, he's still batting over 300, but, like, he pinch hit the other day. He didn't play at all the day before that.
Was the Saturday game? Yeah, it was the Saturday game. Saturday.
I mean, he's not last 2 weeks, he's batting .238. So this stopped quickly, and it was kind of predictable, I think. I'm glad I didn't invest. I mean, to me, Acuña is in a different class than these guys. I mean, Acuña is arguably like Juan Soto probably wins nationally Rookie of the Year, but I think Acuña still gives him a good run.
Ooh,
and Juan
wow.
Soto's special. Juan Ooh. Soto's special, man. I mean, like that's like watching Griffey. He's hitting opposite field home runs. He's hitting .460 at Yankee Stadium. He's hitting lefties. He's not a runner, but you can't sit him.
This guy. Do you have higher, Soto or Acuña?
I probably have Acuña. I didn't expect Acuña to miss as much time. I thought he might or might not go in the DL. With the knee, clearly was worse than the Braves let on. But Acuña is a five-category potential guy. You know, that's a good question, because Soto probably hits 300.
Is Soto in your top 100?
Yeah, he will be. I have enough. I mean, with Leo off, I just haven't done anything, but I'm going to do it today. I think Soto has to be in my top 100.
He's just outside of mine in the last rank. But
I don't know what you're waiting for. I don't view him like I do Nimmo. There was a track
19,
record.
He's 19, and it's, 27 games so far? I get it. And I'm as excited as anybody else. If you want to say he's a top 75 player, I don't have a major issue with it. But
I like Jake Bowers, by the way. I'd have him over Meadows. He's going to play every day. He bats second. He's a walker, not a big power guy. So if you told me Jake Bowers doesn't even hit 10 home runs, I'd believe you. But it's good plate discipline. It should be a good batting average. You should score runs. Even bad teams score runs if you bat first or second. So I would rank this Acuña, who I still think is a monster, Bowers second, Meadows third.
And I would rank them the same order for very similar reasons.
Yeah, I don't see how there's a lot of wiggle room in this one. What's next?
Sounds good. Gordon wants us to keep the trend going with the young guys here. Albie's hitting about .150 in June. Is the league catching up to him, or do you think this is time to reinvest and kind of double down on what we saw earlier?
I think they figured out how to pitch to him. He has no plate discipline, even though, I mean, we didn't think he was going to have awesome plate discipline, but he showed it last year. It was good walk rate last year, didn't strike out a lot. Now he's just kind of a mess. And the concern I have with him, he's not even running. He hasn't even stolen a base in the past month. So what is he now? I mean, Ender Inciarte is becoming more valuable because at least Inciarte can steal 40 bases. Albies has stopped hitting for power, stopped hitting anything. I feel like we jumped on that bandwagon too quickly. But, I mean, you can't get rid of him. You can't dump him.
You might be able to. So doing a very quick look at what the biz thinks of Albies in terms of the perceived value, the ranking is still looking like borderline, if not within top 50 overall.
That's too generous now.
Yeah, which means that I think we have, I mean, if that's the case, and in your league, you can throw out some trade offers here and you can recoup that sort of value, I'm cashing in this chip.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, if I told you Albies versus Acuña the rest of the season, I want to say Acuña.
I want to, too, and just the delay on the injury here is bothering me. I have a very difficult time ranking a guy who's currently on the DL higher of these two. But I see your point.
We don't have Albies ranked anywhere near Juan Soto, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Soto keeps doing this, and Albies also keeps doing what he's been doing over the past month.
Okay, and shouldn't Albies' lesson be teaching us something a little bit about Soto?
You're right.
Because there's
right,
going to be some catch-up from opposing pitchers on Soto. I don't want to be the critic on Soto at all. But he's 19, and he has not really made many trips around the league yet.
He also has exquisite plate discipline, which
so
I think Albie, is...
Or so did Albies.
Albies doesn't.
Albies did before the year. Now it's not quite so.
Right. He's not figured out what to do with these pitchers. And Soto will probably get to that point where he has to figure it out as well. But, man, I mean, Soto doesn't even swing at pitches outside the strike zone.
22% chase rate, that's extremely low. Very good.
And probably unsustainable. But every time I watch Soto, I'm like, this guy's just different. He's just special. I thought that about Albies on May 1st, too, and now I don't. But
I would actually disagree that I do think that's sustainable, because I think the chase rate is one that does not necessarily regress to a mean so much. It regresses to the player's own mean. Unfortunately, we don't have data on that from this minor league.
I'm going to end up ranking Soto better than I should. I mean, Soto's not a five-category guy because he won't steal bases, and, you know, he shouldn't the way he looks. But at some point, Washington's going to have to bat Soto third, not Harper. I mean, that's plate discipline with power.
The conversation has already started about Soto being the Harper replacement. Like, you've heard this.
Exactly, yes.
That they're already talking about what happens after Harper's free agency.
How much money is Harper costing himself?
Yeah.
And for everybody who says, oh, he's in a contract year, there's I don't want to say there's almost as many cases where a guy does what Harper's doing. Or remember the Andrew Jones, I think, was the famous guy who in his contract year was just done. I mean, sometimes there's Beltre, who has 48 homers for the Dodgers, and sometimes there's what Harper's doing. It's not always a guy just has a great year in his contract year. We just only know it when he does.
The contract year talk in all sports is nonsense.
I agree.
It is hit or miss, and anybody I've ever seen make this case is using arbitrary examples. They're not taking the whole sample.
All right, what's next?
Strategic question going based on your Albies discussion. You want him as a young guy. Let's say you're in the middle of the pack in like a roto league. You go in Albies or a guy like Matt Carpenter who's looking better lately and has a track record?
I hate to say, I mean, to me it has to be Carpenter. He's proven. Leading off for a good team, not going to run, but neither is Albies. Carpenter just looks, as soon as that, he hit rock bottom at 140, and he got dumped in one of my deeper leagues. I'm like, that's ridiculous. I'll stash him. And now he's himself, but better. I think if you want to win today, it's Carpenter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to ask this one, but I don't see there being any way you rank Carpenter over Albies.
You're right. I mean, I probably have him 50 spots apart, but that's too much. Albies just doesn't look good at all.
Is it too much, though? Because, I mean, like, Carpenter's batting average, I mean,
you know, runs scored matter. And Carpenter's a guy who can score 90 runs every year. You know, that's how Adam Eaton is, too. I mean, they don't put five category numbers up where they're great, but you know you're getting consistency out of Carpenter, at least.
I'm not sure you are, because at the beginning of the year, he was pretty darn awful, and he's had some of those injury questions over the past calendar year plus. I'm not so sure that Carpenter is a guy that I think we need to fully reinvest in. I love the guy in points leagues. I love the guy in the on-base percentage leagues.
Yes.
In a traditional game, though, I'm still going Albies here, and I think the 50 spots are correct.
It's probably going to be hard for me to rank Carpenter over Albies. You're right. But it shouldn't be 50 spots. I think Carpenter's back in my top 100, and Albies slips to, like, the 60s and 70s. I'll probably have Carpenter 80s and 90s.
Where is Carpenter on the player radar right now? I'm going to bet it's
top 100. You can't do that because...
Why?
Well, because, I mean, maybe I'm just taking arbitrary samples, but, I mean, over the past 30 days, he's hitting 300 with, like, 10 home runs. And that's not totally outrageous for Matt Carpenter. He's done stuff like that in the past. And Albies is a rookie who's, you know, 21 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't expect Carpenter to be a top 50 batter right now for the season, because he was even batting 140 a month ago. No, he's not even in there.
Yeah, the runs and the RBI are down. I'm looking at the seasonal paces. The batting average and the homers, the seasonal paces of 237 and 27, don't seem all that far off.
They don't. But the two vastly different players and situations. You got a veteran guy eligible at three infield spots. Mm-hmm. You have a rookie, essentially, who the pitchers are just figuring him out. Mm-hmm. It's like I watch Scott Kingery every day. He's not the same guy that we thought he was, you know, late last season or even in April.
Yeah.
It changed. Pitchers have picked up on this, and he can't react. He can't adjust.
It's tough, especially for me, because I'm going to bet that a lot of people who've listened to what I've had to say here have Carpenter on their team and are faced with this very question. I think I would cash in, but I see your point. I don't feel great about it.
Okay. That's a good debate there.
Joe wants you to get started on another debate. Devers or Andujar the rest of the year?
You know, Devers just ain't getting it done either. And he was, you know, that was stardom right there. But Andujar, I mean, we've already seen the best, right?
Yep.
He's just going to lose playing time.
Well,
when Drury gets healthy enough, like they're saying Drury's going to play first base, I guess, platoon against lefties. Because, you know, you can't say Torres is going to win AL Rookie of the Year. But... You know, Andujar, to me, seems like a guy they can bat eighth or ninth and forget about, and they don't really care all that much about what he does. But Drury could take some playing time there. Walker could, in theory. I don't think Andujar needs to be rostered in a 10-team league anymore.
I think he should be. I think he'll continue to be. I think Brandon Drury getting some time at first base signals that they don't really look at him as a guy who's going to take away Andujar's job anymore. And I have been pretty darn impressed by what I've seen from him. The eye test, simply as opposed to the numbers here, say that he's mixed league relevant. It's on the back end, though. I just like Devers. I like what I see in the guy. I know that he's had a very difficult year so far. But I know over the past couple of weeks, I've been a little bit more impressed by what he's done. He's still hitting for you know, respectable pop.
He has a couple of homers in the past couple of days. He's overwhelmed. I mean, that's a high strikeout rate.
Yep.
25%. Yep. It's going to take people forget he's 21.
Yep.
You can't give up on him in a dynasty. I mean, when he's 23, he's probably hitting 30 home runs, batting 280.
Now, I know they're not similar kind of guys here because Devers, his plate discipline and his chase rate is considerably higher. But isn't there a little bit of a lesson there in terms of the second time around the league that we can apply
Absolutely.
To a guy like Soto?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, you're right. Soto should not be able to do this for much longer.
Is.
But he is.
He is.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it.
And I mean, I will applaud that. I mean, I remember the Devers homer off Chapman in that Yankees game where, you know, I mean, a lefty against a lefty throwing 100 miles per hour and
hits
a home run in a key spot in Yankee Stadium. The overall numbers this year aren't backing him up. I like him just a little bit more than Andujar. I'll tell you this. I'd be more worried about Devers' playing time if this continues, the slump, than I would be about Andujar's.
That's a good point because they do have Nunez and Holt and maybe at some point the suspended Chavez. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be options there for Boston because that team can win now. The Yankees obviously can win now, too. No, it's going to be interesting. You're right. I hadn't thought about it. My immediate response is Devers over Andujar, of course, but maybe not. Maybe not.
It's competitive.
All right. What else we got?
Last one here. Our friends over at Vandalay Industries want your thoughts on Johnny Cueto and Robbie Ray, both nearing a return in the near future. They want your ranking and what sort of numbers you can expect from both moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny Cueto should not be compared to Ray, except for the fact his five starts this season were unbelievable. I mean, ERA of, what, like 080-something? Which, with his fastball velocity, shouldn't be happening. But he wasn't walking people. I mean, who was he facing? Like, there has to be a reason why he was doing that. Robbie Ray's a legit 200-strikeout guy.
I think the reason it's a five-start sample.
And that stuff happens in samples like that. And also, you know, with Cueto, I'm concerned that he won't be able to stay healthy even when he comes back. With Robbie Ray, this wasn't an elbow. This was an oblique. Been out a long time for this oblique.
Yep.
And I have to assume that he wasn't himself when he was pitching. That walk rate was way up. I mean, the K rate was there. ERA and WHIP were high, but superficially. Like, there was BABIP involved and strand rate. To me, it's easily Robbie Ray. I don't know why Robbie Ray can't, maybe not the numbers he put up last year, but have a 350 ERA with a more well over a strikeout per inning the rest of the season. I don't expect Cueto to even make every start the rest of the season.
They're both on rehab stints. Ray just made his first outing, I believe it was, in Class A and didn't pitch all that well. Cueto's supposed to make his first start either Saturday or Sunday. So they're on similar timetables of recovery here. I just think I'm going to take the guy who gets Ks. I'm with you with Ray here just because I think he gets Ks. It has nothing to do with whether I think one makes more starts than the other. I don't feel like I have any right to judge it. I see your point about Cueto that he's had more injury issues over the past couple of years, and maybe he's at greater risk of the two. But for me, it's the Ks before I even get to that.
Robbie Ray is a legit 200-strikeout guy. And other than, like, John Gray, every other 200-strikeout guy, or Samardzija, like, you got a roster.
Samardzija.
Well, not anymore. Yeah, but, like, you know, for past years, John Gray's turned into Samardzija, but worse. So Robbie Ray's not in that class. Robbie Ray is there. You got to have him. I think
I don't want to throw like an ancient reference here from the 80s, but I know who I think of when I'm thinking of like 200K potential and really terrible other numbers, and it's Edwin Correa.
I don't even remember that.
Look at the 1986 Texas Rangers staff. It's a fun one.
Wow. So this can't be right. I'm looking at the Giants pitchers on the player radar for the season. You'll never guess their top five.
The Giants pitchers on the player radar.
San Francisco
Starters
Giants
or,
pitchers.
Or all
any
pitchers.
Any pitchers for the
one
Giants.
One Strickland.
He's number one because of the saves. Although he's not getting any more. By the way, you can drop him in the ESPN Standard League, Hunter Strickland.
He 6 to 8 weeks, yeah.
6 to 8 weeks, and when he comes back, he probably doesn't even get saved. Melanson will be established by then.
Let me think of their other guys here.
It's hard.
See, like Stratton's probably going to be up there, but not a two, I don't
think.
He's
three.
That's what I would have guessed.
Chris Stratton is number three among Giants starters, and his ERA is 4.22.
Two would be... I'm trying to think of the other rotation.
We just mentioned him.
Forgetting. I did?
We did. Cueto is number two.
Wow!
Cueto has five outings this season, and he's the number two pitcher on their player radar for the season.
Is four Andrew Suarez...
No, he's nine.
Okay,
and then Reyes Marranta, who nobody had heard of until he saved yesterday's game, is number four. Marranta. And Tony Watson's five. That it's hard to believe that team's even like almost 500.
Who's the next starter after
Derek Holland?
Yes, Derek Holland. Nobody wants him, but he's had a couple of decent outings here. All streaming.
I don't know. So this has been Giants fantasy focus. If you had asked me, like, before the show, name the top five Giants pitchers, I couldn't have done it. Reyes Morant is on there?
Yeah.
All right, we're done for today. Thank you so much for listening to our fine little show here. And more will come on Monday, I believe, although, well, who knows. What national day? Oh, first day of summer.
Yay!
Is that today?
It's today, yeah.
It's about time.
Longest day of the year.
It's going to be a nice day.
It is.
Well, I think
it better not have any of these little rainstorms we've been seeing lately.
A very interesting sports day. So yeah. We just did a baseball podcast. The NBA real draft is tonight. We're doing an NFL mock draft this afternoon. And
yep.
Boy, the soccer today is fantastic. So watch
yes,
that.
Indeed.
Watch that soccer as well. Thank you so much for listening to our show. For Tristan, for Kyle, for Anthony, I am Eric. Have an awesome weekend.
Everything is awesome.
Summer. I mean, darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.